This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
What happens when Liam Neeson is in Walhalla, or Kate Winslet is in Horsham, or Eric Banner is in the Dandenongs? When a big film or a TV series is shot in a small town or maybe in your suburb, how does it impact the locals? Does it bring tourism? How long does that tourism last? Does it bring friction? It takes a lot of consideration and a lot of consultation with locals to get it right. And this includes everything from connecting and speaking with Indigenous elders to allowing locals to have their time to shine as extras. And then what if the story that's being told in your town or your suburb isn't a happy one? Is that something that you want to see? So how important do you think it is for our local towns and our suburbs to be represented in film and television? And maybe somewhere where you live or somewhere where you grew up has been on the telly, has been in a film. And how did the community benefit?
This is Vivian Worcester-Jones on assignment in Australia.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
I decided I'd savour the more leisured rhythms of a quiet country town.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Vivian Worcester-Jones.
Vivian Worcester-Jones!
Austin Baller. Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you, your co-host this morning, Ed Gannon, Director of Media Means, the former editor of the Weekly Times. Ed, where you grew up, or somewhere where you've lived, has it ever been featured in a telly series or in a film of some description?
Good morning, Rochelle. Yeah, well, it wasn't where I grew up. It was actually where I went to uni, and I went to uni at Warrnambool and in the late 1980s. I still remember the great excitement when they announced that they were going to make a film called Quigley Down Under, and Tom Selleck of Magnum PI, you know, the Hawaiian shirt and the jumping in and out of the Ferrari.
He was the moustache man.
Yes, he was coming to Warrnambool, and the place just was so excited. So I actually did audition as an extra at the time, and I went to the audition in a motel room in the Mid-City Motel in Warrnambool.
Everything about that sounds so sus.
And when I got there, I was told that the part was actually for a convict coming off a ship, and I was perhaps a little bit well-fed to be to take that role. So my hopes of it being an actor came crashing down at that point.
So goodness.
I didn't. Well, I had a lot of mates who actually got roles, and they were standing around at the Maritime Village while there was some sort of fight going on, and they were all cheering. My media lecturer, I remember, he's standing there with a big bushy beard doing it. But I remember that was just so exciting, and it was all about, oh, Tom Selleck, we've seen him down at Bojangles at the pizza restaurant. Oh, we've seen him. This. No one actually ever saw him because we didn't have social media back then.
That's the difference now too, exactly, right? If Tom Selleck is at Bojangles ordering a Hawaiian, it's going to end up on social media.
Yeah.
So if Liam Neeson's in Walhalla and he goes to get a haircut at the local hairdressers, people are going to know about it. How long did the Tom Selleck effect last?
I think it lasted a while, although I did watch the movie and I didn't get great reviews, but
you're just bitter.
Well, I probably am. But look, it certainly was well known for a long time that it was filmed at Warrnambool, and the Maritime Village, I think, did quite well out of it because they could make a bit of hay while the sun shone at that period. So it hung on that for a while, I think. So, but I mean, it wasn't a small. I mean, Warrnambool's not a small place, so it has a bit of substance about it. But it did it that aura about, you know, the fact that Tom Selleck was in town, and it carried on for a while.
You see, at the moment, things like White Lotus, and you know, conversations around, oh, how much did the local Thai government, how much did they pay in order to have the latest series shot here? So it does have a huge impact in a good and a bad way for a large or a small community, depending on what is being filmed there. I wonder whether small towns kind of promote it as a place, as a friendly place to come and film here. We've got this, you know, whether it be a historic element or some part about their community that is beneficial to the film and television industry.
Yeah, definitely, because it'd obviously be, in most of these cases, you'd expect an economic benefit to it, but it's a real pride thing. We're interesting. We're special. Our town is special. I mean, you did mention about, you know, as long as it is a good film and in a sense,
yeah, if it's a positive, gruesome murder,
yeah,
or something.
a positive movie. But it really makes, you know, I can. You know, in the last, you know, 10, 15 years in regional Victoria, we've been through a really interesting time with drought, floods, fires. So to have that sort of morale fill up for a small town, you know, a town of, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people, is really, really important. And so you can see that the benefit that would come from that. I mean, you look at the dry. I mean, in Wimmera and Amalien, it's filmed in a number of towns there. You can go on dry tours and go to all the different places that was in the dry.
I guess so that's the thing, works, isn't it? How do you capitalise on that, and how do you keep those tours happening and keep people coming long after the film has finished? There's a lot that goes into, I guess, letting the town say, yes, we're going to open up our gates and we're going to allow you to come into our town. A man that makes all of that happen is Drew Rhodes. He's a location manager for film and television. Drew, just sitting here before we went to air, I think I lost track of the amount of films and television series that you've worked on, from Hollywood blockbusters to TV series here that we know and love so well. What makes you select a town or a suburb? What are you looking for?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. So it starts with the script. It always starts with I'm a freelancer in the way that the film industry works. So I get a script to begin with that the producers have developed, and I'm one of the early people in the door in that sense. You might have a director on at that stage and maybe a production designer, but location manager will be one of the first ones that comes in, and we break that script down and we have a look at. We talk about what they want it to feel like. Mm. So my job is kind of it's a number of things. It's a creative job, because you've got to find out all those creative things that the people making the film want. But it's also then very quickly a logistical job and a communications job and a negotiating job, I guess, when I come to that town. And just listening to Ed, I mean, Warrnambool, I've shot in Warrnambool before, and great town. Oddball also filmed in
Warrnambool. Oh, that's right, the dog, yeah.
And when you talk of what tourism impacts potentially happen, and I always say the same thing, I would never go into a town and promise that the film that we're making, you know, can do amazing things in terms of tourism. You would never promise that up front, because you simply don't know. You don't know that it will. But in that particular case, it did. There was a bump after Oddball as well, because families would take their kids there. I was one of them, actually, that took my kids there shortly after the film came out to go, look, there's where it was shot, and down in the Maritime Village.
Yeah. It's like Disneyland, you know, like a movie world.
And in that case, it was an
interesting way to put it, but yes.
It was filmed in Warrnambool about a story that was based in Warrnambool.
That was based in Warrnambool. It was a local real story
though, about the dog and the penguins.
It was a great story because it had such positive kind of tones about it, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And so there's plenty to be gained out of that potentially. But again, you don't know that that's what's going to happen before it happens.
Yeah. Sue's in the CBD. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
What did you want to share?
I was the Actors' Equity MAA organiser between 85 and 2002. And literally, I negotiated industrial agreements and casting of locals as extras on virtually every film or TV program that was shot in Victoria during that time.
So what did that involve? How did you go about that?
Well, including Quigley Down Under, coincidentally, which is what prompted me to ring. That was a real boon for Warrnambool, and particularly for the Maritime Village down there. So I'd say that film contributed enormously to tourism in Warrnambool. I think also some of the ones shot in country areas, often they would involve big crowd scenes where the locals could get involved. And I remember, you know, the casting director and I trying to work out where we could find a boot scooting troupe in, you know, some remote country town. But I mean, literally, if you look at the films that have been shot, and don't forget that the Film Victoria provides an incentive for films to go and shoot in regional areas. It's called the Regional Location Attraction Fund.
Is that still a thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes, yes. I mean, there's the one for overseas productions as well, but locally in Victoria, it's a fabulous fund. So people, producers actually get some money if they take their film to a local area, which is your producer that you're talking to right now, does start with the script. Mm. And so films like The Dry have been, you know, I mean, it's enormously beneficial. There's one downside, though. If you think, and I've been desperately trying to remember the name of it, there was a film called that Russell Crowe starred in as a Nazi sympathiser that was shot around Footscray.
Romper Stomper.
It was, exactly. That's exactly right.
I forgot
right.
about that film, so, yeah, right.
And that film made Footscray look very bad.
So this is the thing I find fascinating in that not all, I mean, a lot of our films and a lot of our most successful films, a lot of the Hollywood films that come here, for example, when you're looking for a location, Drew, I mean, you worked on Animal Kingdom, for example, you know, how do you find the house? How do you rock up to someone's house and say, hi, your house looks like a crack den. I'm just wondering if we could shoot in here, please.
You do that carefully is probably the answer to that question.
A little more diplomatically.
Diplomatically, yes. The good and the bad. And you can't... It's the storytelling, basically. So I'm a front-facing person that has to explain the story completely, the story that we're telling. And so the first thing I have to do is take that into layman's terms and explain it, have a little pitch, essentially, that you go out and you say, this is what the show's about. Animal Kingdom was a tough one because it was based on a real terrible, you know, incident. There wasn't anyone in Melbourne that was around or alive at that time that didn't know that, you know, as soon as you start explaining that story, you say, oh, yes, well, that's the Wall Street killings. And then, therefore, you're dealing with terribly sensitive subject matter. And yet, somehow, you have to say, hello, my name's Drew. I'm a location manager. I'm looking for a house. This is what it's about. It's not about you. It's about what we're going to do to it. And don't worry. And, you know, all of that. So, yeah.
And in that instance, did you get anyone's knockback to say, look, actually, we don't want our place involved in this sort of film?
Yes, that did happen then and does happen from time to time for sure. And sometimes it happens because of the subject matter. Yeah, it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's also something that I'm really careful to describe accurately to people what's about to happen. So if you've never had a film crew come along and use particularly your house, I mean, it's any location, but particularly your house, which is a very personal thing.
They take over.
And I will sort of say, I will start by saying, have you ever been to the circus? Because that's what this is.
Yeah.
You know, so it is 50 people or 100 people or 150 people or more that you don't know. They're all coming to your house. We're going to change things around. We're going to move the furniture. We're going to take all your personal effects out. We're going to, but don't worry, trust me, it'll be fine.
Do they get paid?
Yes.
Well?
Yeah. It depends on the show a little bit and it depends on the impact. Essentially, we pay for the inconvenience of having us there, and it is inconvenient from time to time. But also, I'm wanting to make sure people realise that, but people do it for all sorts of different reasons. Some people don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
They do it for the fact that, my grandson is fantastically interested in film and could he watch? And it's like, yeah, of course, you know, come along and sit behind the director and, you know, it becomes part of, you find out what people's motivation is about why they want to help you.
Stephen's in Malden, I think. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Did you have a little moment of fame, Stephen?
I did. I was invited to be on the Gold Diggers show, which was filmed at Porcupine Village up the road in Malden, which is an 1800s old gold mining town. And it's actually, you know, it looked like a film set. It was fantastic. So, yeah, I was involved in that for about three months. Fantastic.
So what was your role? Did you get a line or two, Stephen?
At the funeral when my wife died, I had to give some pennies to the poor girl collecting money. On Friday was funeral day, so I was all dressed in black, and it was the passing of my wife. I was a bank manager in one one scene. Yeah, and just generally in the background, background fodder, as they say. But it was all fun, great fun to watch it all come to life. And it was a very funny concept because it was set in the 1800s, but it was a modern-day script, if you like.
Yeah, Stephen, you said about 3 months or so. That's a big commitment to actually be in those sorts of roles. Is that sort of something that you do a lot, or has it just happened because it was just down the road?
Oh, look, I have done it quite a lot, yeah. And I'm a musician, so I do have daytime, spare time on my hands sometimes. And so I had a lot of time to put towards the project. And, I mean, it brought a lot of goodwill to the town. All the Airbnbs, all the restaurants, the pubs were all sort of booked out. The crew stayed local. So it was fantastic, yeah, really good for Malden.
Oh, Stephen, good to hear from you. When the big blockbusters come to town, because, look, we have incredible studios here now as well, Drew, and if you just look at the state of Victoria, you can pretty much drive 2 hours in any direction and you're going to have landscape from mountains to roaring oceans, you know, to the tumbleweeds of the Mallee. There's so many different spots you can go to. When big business comes to town, does that money go back to Hollywood or does it stay here locally?
No, a lot of it stays here. It's why governments like this, like supporting it to a degree. I mean, there is also the cultural benefit of having, you know, a strong film and television sector. But a lot of the money that gets spent stays local, and there's a couple of reasons for that. It's very labour heavy. Filming in general it requires a lot of labour, a lot of people to do it. So that can be employing locals such as Steve in Malden, but it can also be all the film crew that gets employed. So on a large scale one, you know, what is, say, on a small film like one I'm doing at the moment, that's maybe an on-set crew each day of, say, 60, 65. On a large scale one, you can go up to that standard crew day would be 250, and it might run to 400 on certain days, depending on what they're doing. So it employs a lot of people. So that money stays local. And then the money that also gets spent, you know, expended in a local environment, you know, with catering for all of those people. Now, obviously, we use caterers, film caterers, that actually do our thing because it's such a specific thing. But they might, if we're in the country, they'll buy their produce locally in order to feed us. So it does spread its wings out
among the
community, yeah.
A little later, Will, I know you were behind the Pacific and you were the one that got Flinders Street shut down, and how you managed to do that, I will never know, so we'll talk to you about that. But so many texts of people that have somehow been involved in a film or a telly series. This is from Stephen in Ballarat. 1973, an episode of Homicide was filmed in Trentham. I was in grade 6 at the time. It was the episode where Bud Tingwall joined the cast. George Mallaby had a farm in North Blackwood. I saw a scene being filmed at a local service station that never made it to the screen. I also saw the skid marks painted on the road just near Barry's Reef. Sort of, you lose the element of reality there a bit, don't you?
That would be the only skid marks painted on a road in regional Victoria, I would have thought.
And Tom also went to Apollo Bay.
Yes.
This text says, I brag about the fact that I saw him down the street, but it hasn't made a difference to our town. And others talking about how their farm was featured as a location in the series The Fires in 2021. It was a lot of fun, but of course this was before COVID and we couldn't meet the stars or anything. So it's that idea and the star power. So, of course, The Dressmaker was something that you worked on. So how much sway does Kate Winslet have on the town of Horsham when you go to the local council or whoever it is that you meet and you say, well, I'm bringing Kate Winslet?
Yeah, it makes a difference for sure. That was just one of those great stories too, that it had come from the source was a book. Some people knew about it already. They knew the material. And so so that, in a way, it makes it a slightly easier pitch that there is some star power behind it. Again, you've got to be quite careful that you don't say, oh, yes, she's just going to be available to kind of,
yeah,
you know,
she's going
to talk
go to the
everybody.
Local school. And yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. And the thing that behind all the star quality of this is that it's work. It's just long shoot days and work. And so for those actors, whether it's Liam Neeson or whether it's a Kate Winslet, or I did a film called Ricky Stenicki last year, which was Zac Efron and John Cena, and that caused, you know, a bit of local stir in great ways. Those guys are not necessarily all available to, you know, go and shake hands. It's different now with social media, isn't it?
Once upon a time, if Tom Selleck was in town, then you'd take a photograph and it would go up at the local pizza shop and would still be there, all faded and glorious in a frame 20 years later. But now we sort of know exactly where they are all the time and what they're doing. So if you've been an extra in a film that came to town or in a TV series, or if where you live has been featured in some way, what was that experience like?
My name ain't Roy. Matthew Twigley.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Look out!
This is The Conversation Hour.
We sure showed him, didn't we, Roy?
So have you somehow just walked onto a set? Maybe you were cast as an extra when your town or suburb was featured or somehow highlighted in a local film or television production. And how does it help the locals? Joining you today, Ed Gannon, he's your co-host, director of Media Means, and Drew Rhodes, who's a location manager in the film and TV industry. And some great texts. 1976, as an 11-year-old, my dad and I were extras in a film called Break of Day. It was filmed in and around Maldon. Maldon is featuring quite a lot here. It must offer a lot to the local industry.
It does, yeah.
It was great to see our fun little local area on the big screen. I got my first pay packet and my dad, who is larger than life character, got his mug and his big laughs on the screen. It was so much fun. The film was pretty ordinary. It also had some nudity in it. So as a kid, it made it a little bit rude. The town was converted. The road in the main street was covered in dirt. It was all very exciting. That's from Annie. Joe Brinkman is the head of incentives at Vic Screen. Joe, we actually had someone ring in earlier who was a part of the Media and Arts Alliance and sort of talking about the incentives almost for people to film in regional parts of Victoria. How much of a big business is it?
I think it's a real, real benefit to having productions in the region. And I think we're very supportive because of the many different benefits that Drew mentioned earlier. It's really, I mean, there's an excitement that comes when you bring a project to town, especially, you know, for something like The Dry or the second Force of Nature, the sequel to that, where you've got Eric Bana out in the regions. I think there was a project some years back where they actually named a burger after Eric, the Bana burger. But, you know, projects like High Country and The Dry, they'll go into a town, they'll patronize all the businesses, they'll stay there. The locals can become extras and be featured there. And there's just this lasting sense of pride. With The Dry specifically, we even were able to have the world premiere of the film in Horsham. And a lot of the people who were in that, a part of that production, whether in a supportive way or as an extra directly, they came down for the big night.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? I spent some time in Horsham as the breakfast presenter there. It's a small town, right? And you got a world premiere in Horsham. I'm telling you, the fancy dress is coming out that night.
That's right.
Hey, Joe, the incentives for a movie, is that – how high does it sit on someone that's looking to make a film? Like, you know, it's – we found a location. We have to get the incentives. We're not going to do it. Or, look, it's a nice thing to have on the, you know, the top of the cake. Is the location is everything. And if we get incentives, yeah, that's okay. Where does it sort of sit?
It's got to fit the creative first, I think, and foremost, because that's the story. And most projects have a location, and it's partly why we're so passionate about stories that are actually in their essence Victorian. But, you know, Melbourne and Victoria have some of the most diverse locations in the world. We built a Mumbai slum on the foreshore in Altona. We've done Oakland, California in the CBD. You know, we've doubled Nepal in Walhalla. You know, there's a huge diversity of locations that we have in Victoria, which probably I would say the most diverse city locations in the country, which makes us very competitive with other territories. And yes, because it's expensive to make quality films at a world-class level, the federal and state incentives are important.
I find that incredible, given that we're so far away, right? We are a beautiful country, but as I think Jerry Seinfeld says, you know, we're at the arse end of the earth. So what makes Hollywood come to Victoria to film when there's so many other places, Joe, that they could go to?
I think the crews, the reputation of the crews is world class. There's a few different key elements. One is right now we've got a great exchange rate. Two, we've got great state and federal government support mechanisms. There's also world-class infrastructure in Melbourne. We recently, 2 years ago, opened our 40,000 square foot mega stage, which allows us to make large projects here in Melbourne, where previously we were constrained to medium-sized projects. And then it's the diversity of the locations we have. So you put all that together, coupled with the lifestyle, you know, the sports, the music, the theatre, the art, and Melbourne's a really attractive
just our general vibe. Joe, stay with us. Drew, would that surprise a lot of people? Like, we have some incredible, huge studios here. The funding and the money and the enthusiasm, because quite often we feel like the arts is forgotten here, that sport takes precedence. So would it surprise a lot of people?
It's so true. I mean, when you think about, and there's nothing wrong with this, but when you think about Melbourne as a town, you know, is AFL nuts. And yet something like just the screen industry, Joe will have the figures much more at his, you know, fingertips than I do, but it pumps in serious money. You know, it puts in a lot of cash. But I can also back up what Joe was just saying. When we did Ricky Stenicki, that's directed by a fellow called Peter Farrelly, who directed things like, you know, Dumb and Dumber and There's Something About Mary, very famous director and a Academy Award winning director as well, for The Green Book. When he came out here to do that, he actually said to us, Melbourne's the best place he's ever shot, ever, with anything. Now, a whole bunch of that gets said sometimes, and it's fodder for guys like Joe to go, yeah, Melbourne's awesome and whatever. He didn't say it publicly. Well, not only did he did say it publicly, but he said it privately to us. And he said one of the key reasons was the crew. You know, the crews that makes the 16-hour flight from Los Angeles worth it, is the fact that they can get top-level, world-class crews who basically, like me, in my early career, I was brought up on doing fast turnaround television, quite a bit of it at the ABC, you know. So you learn to do a lot with a little.
Isn't it amazing the amount of big, even Margot Robbie, I think, has said she's learnt so much of her career and her stamina from just fast turnaround from Neighbours.
Just
the way you turn that around. Joe, stay with us, but let's have a quick chat to Rebecca, who's in Thornbury.
I own a wellness centre here in Thornbury, Prana House, and it's obviously large space. And we got approached by a production crew late last year to film The Bachelors. So we had three separate things going on, and it was all about building intimacy. So, you know, we had one room with massage, one room with eye gazing, and another one with a sensory experience. So they just completely overtook the business for the day.
Oh, my goodness. You should have seen the looks on our faces just then, Rebecca. There's a lot of eyebrow raising. Yeah. What was your first reaction? Like, how did they approach you and what was your reaction?
I got a call from the producer of the group date to say that they were looking for a space to host something, and they wanted to do something around building intimacy. Did we have any people that could help? They were talking about maybe doing a yoga, couples yoga at the time, but they ended up sort of changing. And so we had one of our massage girls here teaching them how to massage each other, and then they brought two external girls in, one that helped them with the eye gazing section, and the other girl who's like an intimacy coach type thing, and she came in with all different feathers and things, and they were blindfolded and all that sort of stuff. So, you know,
oh my goodness,
like, okay, let's do this.
And did you have any regrets, Rebecca?
No, not at all. I mean, I know the cafe downstairs got smashed, and I should have told them the day before. I just didn't even think. And at one stage I went in there and I said, I'm sorry. And they're like, this is fantastic, but we're like, it's like a Saturday in here.
Yeah, we would have ordered more rolls or whatever it is. Rebecca, thank you. I guess that makes it tricky, Joe, isn't it, when you approach someone and you're speaking to someone about whether it be a well-known series or maybe something that's a little bit racy or a little bit controversial? Again, that would come back to the crew and how they approach people.
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't shy away from the racy or the controversial. At the same time, we are government agencies, so we have to be responsible with taxpayers' money with what we fund. Really, the benefits to Victorians and the Victorian businesses is what we really focus on. And how much we communicate and when is super important, like Drew said. There is a level of privacy that certain scenes require. The actors also, are working professionals. So, there's some scenes that'll be out in the open, right there in public, and everyone can have a selfie and take a photo and have something to show. Other times it's a closed set, and we try to maintain a high level of confidentiality around the production.
There's a text that's come in and it says, our local girls' school was used to shoot the ABC's Jamie series. The production could not be used, it could not use any identifiable shots, but very identifiable to those who know it. That prompts me to remember that Elvin Purple, one of the Elvin Purple films, was filmed at Presentation College in Windsor, girls' Catholic school, which sort of is
on Dandenong Road. Yeah, I think it's not there anymore.
Yeah, not there anymore.
As a previous Prezzo girl in Moi.
Yes. The conversation with between the production for Elvin Purple and the nuns of Presentation College, I would love to be on a fly on the wall to listen to that. How would you go about that?
Well, and of course, the world's changed so much since then. And you mentioned social media, Rochelle, before. Social media has caused what I would describe as when I'm going and dealing with, I'm not aiming at them particularly, but it might be government agencies. Everybody's risk averse. So they don't want, because one tweet, one push the wrong way in social media could mean that there's a problem, there's a headache for somebody at the other end of that they didn't realise was going to happen.
Mm.
So they get very risk averse. The problem with that is that what we do in drama and in comedy, it's the same thing. What drives it? Conflict. Conflict drives drama, and it drives comedy as well. So if you're doing scripted drama of any sort, you're going to end up with conflict in the story, in the way that the storyline is. And Elvin Purple would have been a classic example of that.
Yeah.
And it would have been all sorts of wrong. But what we would do now is you can't ever approach somebody without explaining entirely what it is and then saying, it's your choice. And this is what I would do in a very open sense early on. Give them script pages if you have to. But you would say this is what this thing is actually about.
Be really transparent.
Because if you think about it too, we're about to spend a heap of money very, very quickly. So every day that ticks over, you're ticking tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's like a factory. So if you imagine that you had to stop a factory line, if the day stops because you didn't explain it properly, and
that's going to cost someone their job and possibly a lot of money.
Yeah, it's what kept me awake at night.
Joe Brinkman, thanks so much for your time and your insights. I think we'll have to follow this up. It's so fascinating.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Head of Incentives at Vic Screen. This is from Erin. Our house in Williamstown was used as a psychologist house in Blue Heelers. My little sister had her photos taken with Lisa McCune and myself, and the other sisters weren't allowed to come home from school, so we missed out. And others saying, sea change. We couldn't get across the bridge at Barwon Heads when they, in inverted commas, blew up the bridge. Sea change and what it did for Barwon Heads and that little community. Yeah. But I think that there was still a lot of debate and conflict about whether it was good for the community, I remember at the time. People were like, oh, we're so sick of tourists coming in and overrunning our town. Or was I just reading the negative press?
No, I think that's completely fair enough to a degree. The thing that we have to face up to too in terms of what we do when we make film and television is it can be inconvenient. There's nothing that I hate more really as part of my job. When I've got to do a very large lockdown, say I've got to lock whole streets off or do something that's a little, it's more significant. Anybody who stood next to me on set on those sort of days will know that I'm kind of, my left leg doesn't stop jumping around, and I'm nervous about the thing. Not nervous overall, but I just hate the idea that we're getting in people's way. But unfortunately, they're the eggs that you have to break to make the omelette. And It does, and that's because a film crew requires control.
Mm.
Essentially, you have to control it. If you imagine if you're doing, pick a period show that I've done, Franny Fisher, you know, and it's 1920-something, I've got to control everything about the background.
Well, you did The Pacific, right? Yeah. So when we spoke about, I mean, I don't think anyone that was living in Melbourne or Victoria at the time remembers that you shut down.
Yes.
The heart of the CBD.
It's why I like coming and doing these sort of things, because it's cheaper than therapy.
it was a bit going on. Yeah, you shut down Flinders Street.
Yes.
How?
well, look, that was an interesting one too. That was the biggest show. I believe this is true. I'm going to say it is anyway. It was the biggest, most expensive television show of its day. So it was 200 and something odd million US, 10-part.
Because who was it? Who was behind it?
Spielberg. And Tom Hanks. And it was the companion piece or the following
That's
piece
right.
to Band of Brothers.
That's right.
And so it was the Pacific campaign of the Second World War across 10 episodes. And similar to Band of Brothers, the source material was drawn from real soldiers, real experiences, real memoirs, that sort of thing. So one of the producers said to me early on, this is not a thing that we can stuff up. This is a thing that we must get right. And also their reputation preceded them. They were really great producers, very responsible. But they said, okay, one of the shows was set in 1943 in Melbourne when those soldiers were on R&R, and this really happened. They came back after Guadalcanal or wherever it was and came back into Melbourne. So we had to show them coming off a tram, period correct, and being in Melbourne and having ice cream and doing the things for the first time in their ragged clothes. And it was a pretty amazing experience. So you start from the beginning in telling that story to everybody that we had to go through, and it was quite extensive from state government to local government to all the agencies.
How far out did you start to have those conversations?
I think that one we had some time. So there was like about 4 months before, and we had to slot it because you can't just shut down the city anytime you like. So we slotted it in the week after the tennis finished, I think. So it was like
smart.
It was like the first, it was the last week of January, first week of February, I think.
Wow.
And we had the ability to close it for nearly, it was 52 hours or something that we shut this.
But isn't that wonderful, as inconvenient as it may have been, it's so exciting, and you still want that to happen as opposed to it being done in a studio or being recreated in some other way.
Yeah,
the idea of actually being on a location.
Yeah, so one of the most amazing things that happened that day was those producers were high integrity. And they brought out a couple of the surviving members of what they call the Greatest Generation. I was standing beside them at one stage while one of them was being interviewed, man in his 90s kind of thing, and then got to speak to him afterwards. He was there. We were recreating.
Oh
he remembered
God.
Being in Flinders Street and doing what was being done, getting off a tram in 1943. And then he's 90-something and standing
was
there.
Was he happy with what you did?
Yeah, he really was. And that was spine tingling kind of stuff. So it has great value to be done in a real sense, for sure, rather than in a studio. The actors feel it, the crew feel it, and you get a sense of its reality.
In that case, do you have to pay someone to do that? Because we've got the recent case of Ryan Gosling's film in Sydney where they closed the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and there's a story that's a rumour they've paid $1 million a day for it. Do you have to do that?
Yeah, that wasn't a cheap day. That day, I think the location budget was something like $280,000 or something for that one singular day, and that was only a component, of course, of the money spent. The spend on that singular day would have been well over $1 million.
Mm.
You pay all the authorities that you need to pay. Yeah, the state
above
government,
board, right?
Above board. No bribes here. No, that's right.
This is from Jim in Elwood. It says, Rochelle, I supplied all the vintage eyewear for Spielberg's The Pacific, a mega production which was shot in Melbourne and in Queensland. They had a big budget. So there you go. There's just one small business that benefited from it. Richard Sawada is the director of the St Kilda Film Festival. Richard, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. When you look at the a huge array of films that are shown at the St Kilda Film Festival and always have. Is it a wonderful time to not only showcase our local directors and filmmakers, but to showcase our towns and our suburbs?
It most definitely is. And you know what? Oh, thanks for having me on, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think if COVID taught us anything, it was about connecting with our communities and things nearby to us and things that are close in our lives, including neighbours and neighbourhood streets and all that sort of thing. And I think you've really seen that in certainly emerging films from emerging filmmakers now. There's much more of a sense of localization and local stories and kind of small relationship stories as well. So that's really great to see. But look, I've traveled around with film festivals. I used to do a bit of work with the National Film and Sound Archive and Screen Australia and such back in the day. And I traveled around to a lot of regional communities, particularly in the Northern Territory and Western Australia, which was part of a tour that I was looking after then. And the connection that local audiences make when they see themselves on screen it's actually really profound. And with the National Film and Sound Archive program we did, there was one program we did of old newsreels and this and that. And the last 20 minutes or so was tagged with films from around the region that we were actually screening the films in. And some of these towns were quite small. And it was like, oh, I went to school there. Oh, I remember Uncle Joe had this shop over there. And, you know, it was like almost a party, like being in someone's lounge room. It was quite phenomenal. And I was also actually in a film that was shot in a regional location in WA, which was Rolf Dahir's film Dingo, which starred Miles Davis and Colin Friels. And I had a featured performance role in that movie, which ended up on the cutting room floor.
Oh, for my
film career.
So close.
I know, but it's phenomenal the way that the productions take over an entire town. And as one of your guests was saying before, you know, the locals are extras, they bring out their own cars and the whole thing. It's just, it's such a big thing for those places. And it was a big thing for me too. It's like, oh, wow, this is how it works.
Richard, there's a text that's come in and says that my now husband Kevin says he was instrumental in making of Picnic at Hanging Rock. He was 15 years old at the time, and for a nominal fee, he and his mates carried the very heavy generator up the winding path to the top of the rock. It made me think about a film like Picnic at Hanging Rock, and it's based on a book, but my view would be that film has created that location. Like the only reason we really think of Hanging Rock is because of this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, how important is those sorts of things that actually, I mean, particularly they got the name of the location in the film?
They're incredibly important, but I don't think Hanging Rock was actually shot at Hanging Rock. But I could be wrong there. One of your more intelligent listeners.
True?
Not sure. I think it was, though. I think it probably was.
Wood End and Hanging Rock.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough. I'm wrong again. So, but look, you know, it is incredibly important. You look at the castle, for instance, and Bonnie Doon, the whole Bonnie Doon thing. I mean, really, it's such an iconic part of just the vernacular now, not just as a geographic location. It's just part of the vernacular, really. And, you know, places like Clunes, where they shot a part of Mad Max, you know, people go on pilgrimages there, and there's like big events that happen there because of the sequence that they shot at Clunes, which is still very authentic against how it looks in Mad Max. It's still, you know, kind of there. And, you know, looking at Ghost Rider as well with, you know, that I can't remember what the name of that kind of bridge is that goes across the freeway that looks so awesome that the Ghost Rider goes down here in Melbourne. It's just like every time I go over that, I think Ghost Rider. And, you know, what you were talking about, Dimboola before and The Dry 2 and such. But also older things like On the Beach, you know, that's just such in the screen history in Australia and in the international screen history as well. So it's really super.
And it sort of shows when it's not done well, like when we talk about Bell's Beach and at the end of Point Break. And it's so obviously not Bell's Beach. Should have jumped on a plane, boys.
Yeah.
But if I can tell you a quick story, I was on the film tour that I was doing. I went to a town called Wagen in WA, which is on the edge of the Wheatbelt. And it's not always about the location of the films that they're set in, but the location that films are screened in and that people see the films. That's really super important. And in this town, One of the locals, Frank Terry, had converted an old power station into a 60-seat cinema, and he ran it with his wife, and they were quite elderly at the time. And I had a barbecue out on the street when I was doing the thing, and everyone for the opening night, and everyone was having a drink and all that sort of thing. And they all turned up in their Sunday best, absolutely looking the best. And then the next night they turned up, all of them again, still dressed up. And I said, you guys are great. You get so dressed up and you're so into it. And they said, you know what? We don't care what's on. We're here to so you come back.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah, it was great.
And that's nice. You want to know that everybody benefits from it. I'm so glad that so far today I haven't been disappointed and that, you know, that people haven't been ringing going, oh, we got completely ripped off, or then the town suffered as a result. Richard, thank you. Thanks for your insights. Richard Sawada is the director of the St Kilda Film Festival. Before we sort of look at tourism just a little bit more, what happens if it's not done properly, Drew? So I'm thinking of a student film that I was involved in. There was going to be a jailbreak, right? And so the brainwave of the director at the time got my mate into a green jumpsuit and then pretended to break out of Pentridge, which was a running jail at the time. Security guards came up and said, mate, that is a real quick way to get shot. What are you doing?
Yep. It's there is a serious side to all of this, in the sense that sometimes the stories that you're telling are not, have a negative connotation or about crime or that sort of thing. To answer your question of what happens, it's not good. The police will get called. Student films, this happens every so often, where they won't have done the due diligence that someone like me would do, because you wouldn't, and they don't know.
Because you've had to have like a sniper set up for a film.
Yeah, so I did Halifax a few years ago, which was a TV series with Rebecca Gibney, and the whole series was about a sniper working off rooftops in Melbourne, taking people out seemingly at random. That was the storyline. So the very first conversation I had was with the Victoria Police, because I rang the film and television office at VicPol, and I said, right, this is what this thing's about. And they went, oh, yeah, that's funny. Good luck with that. But we had to take it unbelievably seriously, because think about what can go wrong with that. Most of the time, if you've got, say, the actor with the gun on the roof, you're going to have lots of crew around it. But what happens when we have to get the shot from the drone where it's just the actor on the roof by himself with a gun that can then be overseen by potentially hundreds or more people from other buildings? So it has to be taken really seriously so that nobody makes a mistake.
Freya Higgins-Debiol is a senior lecturer in tourism at the University of South Australia and has been listening to a lot of this program. Other than the sniper on the roof, Freya, so far we've learnt that small towns love the crew coming to town. People have been reminiscing about, you know, 1974 and being 6 years old and the circus coming to town. It's good for small towns from what I can gather.
It is. And in fact, I've experienced it myself. I come from a small town in North Carolina that's been a film site since the 1980s when Dino De Laurentiis created a film studio nearby. So yeah, I understand that pride and the excitement that they bring to small towns.
What springs to mind for you, I guess, either where you grew up or here, in some of the more iconic locations that people still travel to?
Well, I think that one thing about Australia that's really important in thinking about films and how then it's carrying over into growth and tourism is how film can lead to a branding of a place. And Australia has such beautiful, iconic natural beauty. The culture, though, is also very famous around the world about being laid back and cheeky. And these aspects can be branded in a film, like, you know, the old Crocodile Dundee films, even if it's stereotypes. It does lead to branding of a destination and can attract tourists for years to come.
I think what's interesting, too, and maybe we've seen this with The Dry, it brands all aspects of the reality of where we live. And I think how drought, for example, has been captured and the importance of that. And so it takes in even the weather, Freya.
Yes, and this idea of negative aspects or real living, the gritty, authentic nature of places can be a key aspect. and, you know, can pay off in surprising ways. So some of our sci-fi films or some of the darker films can lead to visitation for people that are attracted. You know, we have a phenomenon in tourism called dark tourism. So, yeah, people are attracted to very different kinds of aspects. And, of course, there's the fantasy aspect, too, that, you know, people do come for fantasy but could engage with the reality of a place after they arrive. And, you know, we've even coined a term in tourism about the sea change effect, which came off of the 1990s series from the ABC called Sea Change, filmed at Barwon Heads.
Yeah, that had a huge impact. Mm-hmm. I think people still talk about it. Freya, thank you so much for your insights. Did you ever get a shot as an extra when you were little?
No, I didn't have those ambitions, but my sister did. But I certainly loved rubbing elbows with the famous and celebrities. So that was a real treat.
Freya Higgins-Debiel, Senior Lecturer in Tourism at the University of South Australia. Thank you so much. Drew Rhodes has been with you this hour, Location Manager for Film and Telly. And Drew, many would think, you know what, your job, it's finite. It's not going to have much of a future because we do everything digitally now. We've got all of the big studios. But what I've taken from today, Ed, is that it's actually the people and the place that makes it work. And you started the hour by saying, how do we want this film to make people feel? And I think you get that from location.
You do, by being in a real place. What we're trying to do is make you as an audience believe what's not really there necessarily. And so, yeah, very much it comes into how something is filmed too, the cinematography, the way that it's directed. But certainly what I know is that actors and creatives love the feeling of being in a real space. You can watch actors respond to the place sometimes. I just very briefly, I did a prison-based movie that Guy Pearce was in just before Christmas, and that is really interesting because you're filming in prisons. Interesting space obviously has an effect.
It's going to feel different to it being.
It's going to feel different. As soon as you take everybody into that place, you couldn't shoot that in front of a green screen. You know, it makes people feel different. So, yeah, that's what we're trying to bring forward. Yeah.
What a fascinating job. And the people you have to convince and talk to, oh, my goodness, gift of the gab, as my nan would say, you'd have to have.
A little bit, yeah.
Drew Rhodes, thank you so much. Ed, are you spewing you didn't get that little walk-on role now?
I reckon I could have made something of it.
I think you could have.
Yeah.
I think your life could have been so different.
I might go and have another go at another film.
Ed Gannon, Director of Media Means, thank you so much. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.